that value work, care, and stability and security for all families. So poverty will shrink when we build an inclusive economy and we make opportunity the floor, not the exception. And, you know, it sort of takes me back to what we started out our conversation is, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Sr. and his campaign to eliminate poverty and as a presidential campaign. We have not seen that in a very long time. And we do need at a national level someone to be changing the public conversation. What will it take to make the right policy choices? We have certainly a long way to go, but I think poverty is only going to end when our policy choices reflect the belief that everyone deserves stability, dignity, and opportunity.
Well, Elaine, thank you so much for being on our show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Love the questions and looking forward to chatting another time.
And thank you for listening to Policy for the People. We will see you next time.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hi, this is Frank with a PH and a hard C. Your basic average all-American Jewish lesbian folk singer coming out to you on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland.
Hi, here we are once again with Mona, our expert on how to live at home without going anywhere and watching every movie and TV show you can find.
I wish I could watch every movie, but we are in the time of way too much new TV right now. But
there's a lot of stuff right now. We're just gonna power through a bunch of things.
Okay.
And I'm gonna begin with you.
With me. Okay.
Because I'm a gentleman, and I think I'd like to hear from you on two of them. One of them is All Her Fault.
Yes.
And the other one is I Love L.A. Describe I Love L.A.
Well, I Love L.A. is Rachel Sennett's new series. And I just love her. I mean, it is no joke that when Bottoms came out 2 years ago, it is literally one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. I've watched it multiple times. It is bonkers. I don't know how to describe it. Not for everyone. For me, it's so off the wall, hilarious.
So LA, I Love LA is similar?
You know, completely different.
Oh.
And this is a series. Bottoms was a movie, takes place in high school and has a real surreal air to it. This does not.
Oh, okay. Let's just talk about LA.
Those kind of people have this like endless ambition. They want success and money and like a nice house.
Ooh,
and all these things.
You know what? You do have a pretty good boyfriend.
But the perfect
time to step out and make sure that the town sees us.
What?
You realize that you are so different ever since Tallulah got here?
Right. So this is a group of Rachel Sennett plays a kind of character she normally does seem to play a little bit, not quite a fish out of water, but someone who seems to be crushing it on the surface, but is flailing underneath in some way. Things seem good. She has her live-in boyfriend, who is Joss Hutcherson, one of the internet's boyfriends. And she's living in LA, and it's her birthday. She has a job. She's going to be, things are kind of very up in the air there. It's a great cast of people. And her best friend, who's played her name Tallulah, who's played by an actress who you would recognize, but you probably wouldn't know, Odessa Azian, comes and just kind of disrupts everything. She's very famous. I'm not really sure how she's famous, but she might be internet famous. But in any event, she's very, very famous. She also seems to be crushing it on the surface. And so the first episode is, there is so much awkwardness. Everyone is awkward. It's very uncomfortable. I watched it in two parts. It's just one episode, but I was like, ooh, this is all very awkward. I need to step away for a minute.
Mm.
But then it turns out this whole group of friends are now back together in LA, and I think it's going to pay off. At least I feel like it is.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this question, if I may. there's a trend now with, I think there's a TV show called The Chair and others where awkwardness and inability to interact with other people is a key element. What's up with that?
I don't know. And I was thinking about that myself as I was watching the show. It's a new, it's this new vibe where the audience needs to feel uncomfortable too. I started watching The Chair and I stopped because I did not enjoy it. I was like, no, this is not for me. I'm sure it's for a lot of people. It's just not it was not for me, but it's awkward in a different way. This is very funny, but not in like, I found The Chair to be kind of surreal.
Oh, you know? I see.
And I mean, in the actual meaning of surreal, I'm not just banding it around. But this is more straightforward. I like it. It's on HBO Max, Hulu. So accessible.
And then there's the other one you mentioned that you also really like. That's current. All Her Fault.
So this is, okay. Well, now we're talking about something in the completely opposite. And I can't say I really loved it. It's about a woman who is very successful. She's married to a guy, so they're very wealthy. I mean, I'm not sure exactly where they live. I forget, but it's, I think, Greenwich, Connecticut type, right? Mm-hmm. And her child is in private school, and she meets another mom and they really hit it off, and another successful woman, and their kids become really good friends. And then one day she gets a text from this other mom. They have nannies, right? Could her son Milo come for a play date, come pick him up after school at their house? And she arrives and her kid is nowhere to be found. And not only that, the woman at this house has no idea what she's talking about.
Wait a second. Is this a comedy?
Not at all. No, this is completely different. I said it's a completely different vein. This is a miniseries, an 8-episode miniseries.
Gary Finch. So she is. I saw her.
We found a body.
She isn't working alone.
People feel bad for me, but they don't want to talk to me. They think that he's gone.
I don't think that. Can we do anything for our kids?
That's our job.
I'm going to need the name of everyone that could have a connection to Carrie Finch.
You don't understand. It was just the people in this room.
The cast is so good. It's Sarah Snook, Dakota Fanning, Michael Pena, Jake Lacy, and a whole bunch of other people you would recognize.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I've
heard of this one.
Yes.
It is a mystery, and it apparently has a lot of twists and turns and surprises.
It does. The thing is, though, if you are a consumer of this kind of media, as I am, in terms of loving mysteries and twisty tales and watching movies and things like that, one of the characters is a bad guy. He is not the bad guy. He is a bad guy. And I knew right away he was a bad guy. Halfway into the episode, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a problematic person who seems good, right? And indeed, he is. And there's a lot of guys in here, so I'm not going to worry about it. The problem with this is it could be a very beguiling mystery. It is 4 episodes too long. It really did not need to have.
Oh.
So they dragged it out and dragged it out. I don't know why. It really could. I mean, okay, maybe 6 episodes. 2 hours that were completely unnecessary. I don't even know why. There was kind of a lot of filler, and it just really made
bad.
And yeah, I think
that's one of the reasons why I like a Slow Horses with Gary Oldman, because it's they're adopting a novel, so there's a good story there already, but then they keep it down to 6 hours or 6 episodes, and there's no fat. It's all trim and lean and fast-paced and funny as heck. So doesn't sound like that.
This is adapted from a novel, but really way too long. I mean, at least 2 hours too long, probably 4 hours too long. They could have done a very tight if you do like this kind of show, there is a payoff. I was not disappointed in the payoff, which often happens.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But I was not disappointed in the payoff. So I recommend it with reservations. You know who you are, listeners, who would like this.
Well, are you going to watch the series Down Cemetery Road?
I absolutely am, because the preview is incredible, and we love Emma.
Yes. So, let's talk about a TV series called The Last Frontier, which I'm really enjoying.
All right, everyone, circle up. We have a down plane 2 miles south from here. It is used to move inmates around the country. 11 are captured, 18 still missing. This is going to be their one shot at freedom.
Mr. Remnick, Sidney Schofield, CIA.
Pavlok's out there executing a plan. Do whatever it takes to secure the perimeter.
Knock, knock!
Schofield, this is Alaska. There is no perimeter. People appear different.
Morning, Frank!
I took an oath to protect them.
This will consume you. I can see it. I've seen what this man is capable of.
I see what's going on. I'm looking for 18 prisoners. And the CIA's looking for one.
Clock's ticking.
I'm up to the 6th episode. I don't know how many there are, but it stars Jason Clarke as the sheriff in either Fairbanks, Alaska, or a city like it. And one night, a Department of Justice airplane falls out of the sky, and all the prisoners who are being transported from one prison to another, or to death row, or numerous places, they all escape. So in the deep and the dark tundra and the high snows, these criminals are on the loose, and he's got to lead a task force, Jason Clarke does, whom I love, by the way, the Australian actor who's also in this terrific new movie, A House of Dynamite. But back to The Last Frontier, he has a troubled past, and he and his wife, or she's, of course, like all wives in TV shows like this, is kind of mad at him for doing his job. And but he's making some headway. There's a person, finally, to wrap up the summary, there's a person who comes from the back east who is actually in the CIA, and she knows what's really going on with this plane crash. And it gets at first I resisted the CIA element of the story, but now I've gotten used to it, and it's beginning to take on nuances I didn't expect. You're following it too, I hope.
I am. I watched every episode. So this, I want to say, is an Apple TV show.
Good. Thank
and
you.
And Apple, they're not penny pinchers when it comes to their casts or the quality of writing, production, all of that. They only do a limited number of shows, and they don't fool around. They're not looking for filler, you know, on a network, you know, and I can see it being on a network, NBC or something like that. But
except it's too good, too much action, and there's never any commercial break. There's no room for commercial breaks.
No. So, besides Jason Clarke, Dominic Cooper plays a very pivotal role as a prisoner who is on the plane, and he's really always worth watching.
He's terrific, and you don't really know what he's about at first. You think you do, but then things change.
I can't tell. And also, Haley Bennett plays the CIA agent, and we also have Alfre Woodard, who is just impeccable in everything, and a lot of other familiar faces.
Yeah, I find her overrated, but go ahead.
No, I love her. Shut up. And Clifton Collins Jr. shows up.
I love him, too. Yeah. There's lots of cameos.
Lots of good, yeah.
There's kind of a part of it, like X-Files, there's kind of a criminal of the week that they have to catch in some cases.
What's good about this show is it could have turned into something very formulaic, very... each episode kind of tied up neatly with sort of that criminal of the week, like you were saying. And that is not what happens here. There are, feels like very dangerous. We're in an unfamiliar place. I mean, I'm going to imagine most of our listeners have not been to Alaska. I haven't. And this is not an environment that I'm familiar with. And it's not one we visit very often when it comes to shows like this either. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting, and they take into account all of those special circumstances that this plane landing in Alaska would mean in terms of being able to investigate these thing, right? So the stakes feel very real. It is very, there are some very truly genuinely scary moments in this show. It's not CSI or, you know, Law and Order or something like that, where it could be a procedural. The stakes feel very real. We are learning what is happening along with the cast, you know, with the show, with the people in the show,
right?
You know, that's, and I like point. That they're not, I like that there's not like, oh, everyone knows this secret and the people who really need to know it don't know it.
Right.
They're finding out, right? So I'm color me in very intrigued. Yes. Yeah.
Now, so we've got, so we like Last Frontier and I Love LA. How about Welcome to Derry?
Things happen here. We don't really talk about it. No one does.
They never even found a body. But maybe we could figure out what really happened to him.
Could have been a drifter.
Do you think somebody could kidnap a kid and keep him underground? In the sewers?
What happened out there, Helen?
Or I should call it Welcome to Derry. You've seen that one. I haven't.
I have. Well, I am a fan of, I am a Stephen King fan, I think, as you know. And the It movies, the last two, I thought were incredible. And of course, I was glued to the It miniseries back in the day, right? So this is takes place before the movies of It. And Derry, Maine is a place that Stephen King loves to place his little mysteries and horror things.
Is it a real place?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
but it could be, right? So this is trying to, because if you know anything about It, the book or the movies, what happens in It has been taking place periodically for decades in the town of Derry.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So now we're going back to an earlier place in time, in the early 60s, 1962, of what happens, what is going on in Derry. I have very mixed feelings about this show so far. I've only seen the first episode.
Oh.
I have to say I was glued to the screen. This is not a show you can look away from. There is not a moment that you would have to be worried you would miss something, right? Because every little slight thing, there are things that are going on, right?
Yeah.
So it is reopening the mystery of It, the creature, whatever it is. We don't know what it is, but
it was a penny.
Well, Pennywise is only one aspect of this entity. Okay.
This all sounds very H.P. Lovecraft.
You know, it has aspects of that. It really does. But with this overriding feeling of something underground, an air of menace. People are trying to go about their daily lives. As they're living their lives, you kind of wonder, like, why don't people move away? I don't
know. there's a sense of a place that's a portal to a part of human or earth history that ordinary people don't know about, but which mad scientists and demons know all about.
Yes. Well, but also I think part of it is, and I'm saying it, not in part of it, Part of it, the entity is,
yes,
that it does keep people from leaving in a way.
Oh, interesting.
Something in the, I don't know, energy, ambiance, there's something that people stay and they pretend that everything's very normal, the same way they do in Sunnydale with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right?
That's a good analogy. Let's talk about Stephen King for a second.
Sure.
You know, the Marvel Universe and the DC Universe were created by whole huge teams of people. Meanwhile, we got Stephen King, who's been writing novels since 1971. I don't know how many he's done by now. 90 or 100?
Crazy, right?
But every year there's two, possibly three things that he that are adapted from his works or short stories or whatever. And he permeates the culture almost more invisibly and more pervasively than these Marvel movies and DC comic movies, which people are getting bored with. And here he has, he's got a new movie out called The Long Walk, and he's got this show, and there was something else a couple of seasons ago. So what do you think about this? I mean, one man, one person doing this, well, and having such an impact on the culture.
Well, this is funny because I was actually talking with someone about this the other day about how I think because Stephen King, and I'm probably not saying anything new, so I'm not a pundit, I'm just a fan. Stephen King is able to, he writes very, very scary atmospheric things, and I what I love about them, they are always grounded in a sense of reality. Okay, H.P. Lovecraft. Okay, I do love some H.P. Lovecraft, and I am a Providence, Rhode Island native. Okay, uh-huh. So, which, you know, he based some friends of mine grew up in houses that H.P. Lovecraft wrote about. I am familiar with, and I've been reading H.P. Lovecraft from a young age for that reason. But, and I love creepy. The thing about H.P. Lovecraft is, I never felt like. You know, they're all very scary in the Mountains of Madness and all of that. Yes, very, very scary. But, you know, the Cthulhu mythos has permeated, has outreached into other writers, have extended that.
Oh, yes, that's true.
But it's very, like, not... it's you walk away from reading it, I may feel an air of the creepiness, but I'm not worried about opening my closet door and seeing a scary clown in there, right?
And it's hard to mimic, this team of people who keep perpetuating the. But right. With Stephen King, part of his technique is to. This is not a criticism, but he overwrites. He writes a lot about where a person is, what they're doing, what brands they choose, what shows they watch, where they shop. And he embeds these characters in the kind of world that is tangible to the readers.
Exactly.
So they love it. And I'll tell you that my late friend Catherine Dunn loves Stephen King. And I think partially for that very reason, you know, because she and also because he was able to make the horrific palpable in a way that some writers can't. But let's zip through a couple of things. Things.
Well, wait, do you want to know if I recommend it?
Oh, well, do you? Well, I guess that you didn't. You're not made up your mind yet.
Well, no, I'm going to watch the second episode. I do have a couple of issues with the first episode. I think it took some really big swings that were not very Stephen King-like. And I kind of wonder, but I do trust the people who are the creators behind this. So I am going to go with it. And again, what I love about Stephen King that you didn't mention is that he writes kids very well. His kids feel real. They don't feel like caricatures of children. I think Stephen King is very in touch with his childhood and what it was like and how real children act in a crazy world. And so for that reason, I'm going to recommend it with reservations.
Okay, that's good. Let me rush quickly through two things that I really want to make sure that people are aware of. One of them is A House of Dynamite, the new film by Kathryn Bigelow, which takes on the world of being on the brink of nuclear war.
Approximately 3 minutes ago, we detected an ICBM over the Pacific. Current flight trajectory is consistent with impact somewhere in the continental United States.
Have we seen DEFCON 2 before?
No.
Is this real?
STRATCOM is asking for launch instructions right now.
I'm gonna need you to breathe.
We are talking about hitting a bullet with a bullet.
If we do not take steps to neutralize our enemies now, we will lose our window to do so.
If we get this wrong, none of us are gonna be alive tomorrow.
They're super realistic, not at all like failsafe and brilliantly put together in a super realistic way. And Jason Clarke is also in this one, too. She loves working with Jason Clarke, I guess. And I highly recommend that. And I also like a documentary called... it's a documentary about Mad Magazine.
Mad was a textbook for us, how to make fun of things.
Mad is not good. Our readers are not smart. Mad is cheap. The quality is poor. It's stupid. That's our brand.
Most parents didn't approve. They thought it was corrupting their minds. And in a way, it was, in a good way.
Oh, yes. When We Were Mad.
When We Were Mad. Yes. Thank you. And
I will watch.
It's basically the history of the magazine.
Love it.
How it got started as a comic book, why it turned into a magazine, everything you wanted to know about Bill Gaines, but didn't know that you wanted to know. And also profiles of 7 or 8 of those incredible artists and writers that they gathered around them. And it's just really fun. It's a real nostalgic trip. And it makes you realize just how big an influence that magazine had. It makes you want to collect all the issues and start reading them again. So those two movies, When We Were Mad and A House of Dynamite. Now, have you seen Pyrbolus, the new Breaking Bad Vince Gilligan film, Pluribus?
Hi, Carol. Thank you for calling.
Yep.
This must be so bewildering for you. Rest assured, Carol, we will figure out what makes you different.
Figure it out, why?
So we can fix it. So you can join us.
No, not yet. No. So this is an Apple TV show, and it is about an alien invasion.
Oh, no, you've already said too much.
Sorry. Well, no, you find that out immediately. It's not even in the, like, yeah. And I have not, but I am very anxious to see it. Yes, it's on Apple TV. Yeah. And it looks, again, Apple TV, they love their alien invasion shows, though. But they really do. Like, they do really good sci-fi stuff. But this looks very kind of silly and weird. And I'm here for that. Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. Is there anything, one final show you want to talk about or movie?
Oh, God. Well, there's... Well, I want to hear your thoughts on Vicious with Elle Fanning, which is also Dakota Fanning, which is also streaming. So I would like to know your thoughts on that.
Oh, well, I barely remember it, although the Fannings are taking over the horror genre because her sister, or maybe it is her, is also in Predator Badlands. And that is an unusual, well, it's not unusual in that you've taken the villain from Predator and turned him into a hero. And there's lots of backstory, but then Fanning is his kind of companion, happy person who is chipper and bright and makes jokes. You're either going to like that contrast or you're not. But it's, if you like the Predator series that have been coming on lately, set in early American history, you probably like this one. But it's set on a planet that has all sorts of strange creatures on it. It's not on Earth. So I have mixed feelings about Predator Badlands, and I've seen Vicious, but I don't really remember much about it. Except that she's okay, alone in a house, and she's either somebody's tormenting her or there's some ghost or something. I really can't even remember. It's ridiculous.
Endorsement. Well, I will be watching Predator Badlands, so maybe we can talk about that because I do love the Predator Alien. I love all that, as you know. So
yes. Yeah. All right. Well, we've run out of time. It's great talking to you as always. I'm sorry we rushed through it, but we just had so much to cover. It was ridiculous. So we'll get around to certain other things the next time.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Ones we missed here and new ones that'll have appeared by then, movies and shows. So it's great talking to you as always.
Thank you.
And we will talk again in a week or two.
Sounds great.
Okay, good. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements